Welcome to the Postpartum is Forever podcast. My name is Keturah Stoltenberg. I am a mother of two young men and a postpartum doula. This podcast is dedicated to all mothers and is a place to hear honest, relatable conversations with the intention of helping mothers feel seen, heard, supported, and valued. I believe that postpartum is forever and that sharing our stories is a powerful way that we facilitate connection with ourselves, our children, and our community. Thank you for being here. Hello and a warm welcome to this solo episode on a series of episodes that I will be doing on the wonderful topic of matrescence. In episode 6 of this podcast, we introduced the word matrescence, which in simple terms refers to the transition of a woman when she becomes a mother and what it truly means in the fullest sense to grow into a mother. Episode 6 discussed the origin of the word itself, the original meaning and intention behind matrescence, and the ways in which it can be compared to the transition that happens to a girl in her adolescence. If you haven't yet listened to episode 6, then I invite you to go back and just listen to that first, as it will give you greater insight into this current episode. In this episode, I would like to talk about the ways our brain changes in motherhood. We've all likely heard a mother refer to her baby brain or mummy brain. It's a term that is often pulled out by way of explanation for perceived memory or cognitive dysfunction. The perspective that we hear this term usually is to play down a mother's IQ, humorize, and sometimes even to patronize and criticize the so-called intellect downgrade, as if this woman has lost her brain. So does baby brain actually exist? Yes, baby brain is real, but maybe not in the way that it is often portrayed. I would like to provide some information around this topic and hopefully dispel common misconceptions about baby brain. We know that when we become pregnant, a lot of structural and functional changes occur, and there are also neurological changes. The two maternal brain changes that I am going to talk to are 1, increased neuroplasticity, and 2, increased production and receptivity to oxytocin. So let's look at that first one. Increased neuroplasticity. What actually is neuroplasticity? Well, it's something that happens in our brain as a result of the brain's ability to modify its connections and rewire itself. So, in simple terms, when we are pregnant, our brain recognizes that the environment in our body has changed, and that it needs to reorganize and recreate new pathways to align with our needs in pregnancy and then in motherhood. The brain has the capacity to change both in form or structure and in function. It is important to note that brain plasticity is possible at any stage of life, but the most acute active times of brain plasticity happen at crucial developmental phases, such as in the first few years of life, during adolescence, and also in a big way during matrescence. I'd like to introduce you to Marion Diamond. Marion Diamond was an anatomical neuroscientist who studied the impact of environmental factors on brain development. Up until very recently, it was thought that the human brain was largely fixed by genetics and that it was unchangeable. Marion, a mother of 4, was moved to research how the female brain changed during the transition to motherhood. In 1971, she undertook her studies in the brains of rats. 2 groups of rats were placed in 2 different environments. 1 group was placed in an enriched environment with tunnels, mazes, and toys, whilst the other group of rats was placed in a bear cage. So the brains of this group were not taken on the same trajectory. Mary and Diamond did this experiment with male, female, mother, and non-mother rats. And what did she discover? Well, the rats in the enriched environment demonstrated growth of the cerebral cortex of their brains, in turn resulting in better performance in navigating obstacles. And compared to the rats in the impoverished environment, exposed to little stimulation and showing no change to their cerebral cortex, it was obvious. However, there was one exception. The pregnant rats had the same size cerebral cortex as the rats in the enriched environment, regardless of whether they were placed in the enriched environment or the impoverished environment. Did this result give truth to the expression mummy brain or baby brain, that it was living up to its reputation? Emotional, clumsy, forgetful, even stupid? Or was it telling us something far more profound? The results were fascinating. The reason why the brains of the pregnant rats didn't exhibit change was because the changes in their brains had already happened. Not because of external stimuli, but due to the biology of being pregnant. If we apply these findings to the brain of a woman, the very act of being pregnant means she's already a mother. And the act of motherhood is on its own an enrichment program. So what sort of brain changes can a mother experience? The gray matter of the brain, a major component of the central nervous system that plays a role in movement, sensory perception, memory, decision making, and emotion, shrinks and becomes more concentrated. Why is there a loss of brain matter? Well, if we again look at adolescence, gray matter is reduced as the brain begins the process of pruning pathways. Connections that no longer serve a purpose, and organizing the parts of the brain that will be most needed in adulthood. In mothers, brain pruning is also taking place to minimize the brain connections that will no longer be of use, and organizing the parts of her brain that will be most needed for motherhood. Did you know that a computer algorithm can detect with 100% accuracy on an MRI scan if a woman has carried a baby to full term within the last 2 years, simply from the volume of gray matter present in her brain? How cool is that? Another study found that the significant reduction in brain volume following pregnancy lasted for around 2 years. The brain of a pregnant and postpartum woman is becoming highly specialized in ways to help her adapt to motherhood and ultimately respond to the needs of her baby. Her cognitive abilities are now being performed in a slightly different way. Other things that happen are that activity increases in the amygdala, the center of emotional intelligence, and plays a role in controlling empathy, anxiety, and social interaction. So her memory function, yes, might be compromised, but she becomes more empathetic. She may become more forgetful, but more adept in the areas of feelings and identifying nonverbal signals. For a mother, this switches on another part of her brain, one that is more open to a feminine way of learning. A new mother's brain is not geared for information bombardment. When she is given constant, inverted commas, expert advice, handouts, books, specialists, and the internet, this works against baby brain. She does not need control and rigid structure, but is more suited to using her intuition, including her 5 main senses, along with feeling, touch, support, and love. I would love to see new mothers celebrate their baby brain rather than apologize, diminishing, or excusing it. There is nothing wrong with you because you have changed and feel differently about your priorities or what career path you want to take. Your brain has received an upgrade. It is now highly specialized to look after you and your baby. So what are some of the other benefits of baby brain? Well, sensory awareness improves, not just in pregnancy, but for a very long time. You become more efficient. You become more adept in being productive or getting things done in a short amount of time. Your resilience is increased. I know that there are a lot of mums that may not always feel that way, but when you consider what is required of a mother on a daily basis, anyone else would be walking off the job. But mothers, on the whole, keep going. They become ambitious. Now, this one might seem confusing because right now you might not feel like contemplating going back to your career. Many mothers that were in certain secular careers just don't feel like that role is working for them anymore and their life priorities. So by way of review, baby brain is real. Rather than being a negative thing, it is a specially curated process to suit the present needs of that woman. Neuroplasticity is your brain's way of recognizing changes in your environment, i.e. being pregnant, and developing new pathways to accommodate these changes to help us learn to be a mother. Neuroplasticity is increased in critical developmental transitions in our early years, in adolescence, and when we become a mother. We have greater sensory awareness, greater efficiency, increased resilience, ambition, emotional intelligence, and acceptance of monotony. So the second way that I'm going to talk to in a broad way is the way a new mother's brain will adapt to her increased production and receptivity of oxytocin. This is involved in the brain's ability to make neural pathways to increase her capacity for more caring and loving. So what is the role of oxytocin? Many people have heard something about the hormone oxytocin, perhaps in conversations about relationships, about birth or breastfeeding, but maybe not sure where it fits into postpartum. I'd love to talk about oxytocin's role in postpartum and in general life because it is a vital hormone to supporting an individual's mental and physical well-being. Oxytocin was originally discovered and isolated in a pregnant cat by pharmacologist and physiologist Sir Henry Dale in 1909, named oxytocin, which meant quick birth in Latin. Since then, oxytocin has been more broadly researched and found that there are oxytocin receptors not only in the breast and uterus, but also in the brain, showing that the purpose of oxytocin is not simply physical responses, as can be felt in contractions of the uterus during labor and assisting the milk letdown in breastfeeding, but it is also to facilitate change in disposition and personality. So what is oxytocin? Oxytocin is a hormone produced in the hypothalamus and secreted into the bloodstream by the posterior pituitary gland. Some people call it the love drug. It's also a stress hormone. It is known as the hormone of love, trust, and connection, as it is produced naturally in the body when we feel safe and bonded. It's important to note that hormones don't work in isolation, but today we are going to single out oxytocin. So how does oxytocin make you feel? Think warm, mushy, lost in the moment. It's like falling in love and forgetting that the rest of the world exists. This sort of feeling has been portrayed inaccurately and critically as proof that new mums are ditzy and forgetful, or to explain an inconvenience of the side effects of baby brain. that as it is a stress hormone, in motherhood it can also contribute to the desire to fiercely protect our offspring from any threat or any perceived threat that may bring harm to our child. We know that baby brain is a mother's superpower and it's not a hindrance. One of the best ways to increase oxytocin levels is through touch. An effective way of increasing your levels of oxytocin is via skin-to-skin contact with your baby and through massage, either you receiving a massage as the mother or giving your baby a massage. When a baby is born, they carry a high level of ACTH, which is a stress hormone. If birth has been particularly intensive, this hormone will be very high. When the baby is responded to with skin-to-skin contact, the ACHT levels decrease and a new hormone, oxytocin, will be mobilized for the baby and the caregiver to produce an antidotal effect. Why is oxytocin important for you and your baby? Put simply, oxytocin attracts you to your baby and your baby to you, enhancing secure attachment. It also helps stimulate breast milk supply and, along with prolactin, aids in efficient milk letdown. It gives your baby a sense of feeling safe, loved, and warm. It brings the autonomic nervous system into parasympathetic, calming baby and the mother, and improving the function of baby's digestive system. It's also known to provide a positive effect on postpartum mood disorders and may be useful in decreasing the likelihood of postpartum depression or anxiety. The beauty of oxytocin is that when the mother's levels of it are increased, the baby's are too. Kirsten Uvnes Moberg is a specialist in women's health and female physiology and mother of four. Kirsten pioneered research into the biology of women and oxytocin, the hormone of love and well-being. As a researcher, she has demonstrated the behavioral, psychological, and physiological effects of oxytocin during the phases of birth, breastfeeding, and menopause. Kirsten describes in her book, The Oxytocin Factor, it's like putting together a puzzle that has some missing pieces. By joining the pieces we do have, we can take a few step backs, see the picture from a larger perspective, and therefore get an idea of how the final calm and connection system is most likely to look. The more a mother looks and talks to her baby, the greater the trust and connection will form between the two of them. Maternal feelings of overwhelming love, protectiveness, and constant worry may begin with these brain changes. And this makes sense of behaviors like constantly checking whether the baby is breathing and not being able to sleep even when your baby is sleeping. Sometimes the impact can also be a trigger for obsessive compulsive behaviors and postpartum induced mood disorders. Obviously, there are times when oxytocin is at its peak, and we may worry that when it drops via hormone fluctuations or stress and fatigue, that we may have lost our oxytocin and unable to get it back again. We may particularly feel this way if we've had a long or difficult birth or have been separated from our baby in the early days. But this is just not true. Oxytocin can be mobilized at any time. The most wonderful feature of oxytocin is that it's not static. It is always changing, and we all have the capacity to continue releasing it throughout our entire life. We have not lost the moment or the window of opportunity. We can replicate these moments. Oxytocin is for everyone. It's responsive to environmental factors. We can boost our oxytocin every day in small and large ways. I invite you to take a pause in your day after this recording and spend a few minutes writing a list of things that you enjoy to do. Or as our newborn mother's teacher, Julia Jones, says, what brings you peace and joy? Sure, in the context of motherhood, oxytocin boosters may look a little different. You may not always be able to spend an afternoon in a day spa or hours lying on the sand at the beach, but there are so many smaller ways that you can reproduce the feelings you get from these kinds of activities. Things like hugs, eating your favorite food, sitting in the sun, putting on your favorite hand cream, journaling, practicing a 5-minute relaxation technique, eating some chocolate. It's that easy. And we can implement small things in our everyday practice. We are only limited by our imagination. This is a really broad subject, and there are so many more pathways we could take when talking about it. But I hope that the information shared in this episode has raised some awareness of the true meaning behind baby brain, and in turn has felt supportive and validating in your feelings and experiences as you grow into a mother. I'd love to hear from you and your thoughts on baby brain, as well as the ways in which you have personally experienced these brain changes as a mother. Much of the information covered in this episode has been inspired by the education I received from Julia Jones and the Newborn Mothers Education and Care Training. If you have any questions or this information has raised curiosity and perhaps the desire to share this education with new mothers or even start your own business as a postpartum doula, head to the links below in the show notes and you can download your free guides from Newborn Mothers. Warm love, and thank you so much for being here. I hope that you enjoyed this episode and that it offered something helpful to your own mothering experience. If you are a pregnant woman or know someone who is, head over to my website to receive your free copy of the postpartum checklist and contact list. And if you'd like to be better prepared for your postpartum, both practically and mentally, purchase the Peaceful Postpartum ebook, a 52-page interactive guide on what you need to know and what matters most in postpartum. And so that we can get these conversations out to more mothers, I'd be grateful if you could like, share, and review this podcast, and we'll see you next time.